Welcome to I'm Kind of a Big Deal, a podcast about the unique lives of people with dwarfism. I'm your host, Christoph Zajac Denick, and on this episode, I continue my talk with John Michael Ogletree. We talk about how his dwarfism should have negatively affected his senses and reduced his ability to play music, but instead, it's been a gift. He is incredibly skilled and talented as a pianist. We will get to hear a bit of his music on this episode, including a full song, so stick around. Though John Michael has had to make significant adaptations for playing the piano, his attitude remains positive. He attributes much of this to his faith and having played tons of gigs. And with the gigs, come the crazy gig stories. Please enjoy part two of my conversation with John Michael Ogletree. All right, John Michael, thank you so much for being back on this show and talking some more about your life.
This has been awesome. I've enjoyed it so far. We'll see if it ends well.
I never promise anything, so.
Well, I'm a terrible person, so I hope that doesn't come out in all of the.
We just know you want little people to stretch for all the sinks in the business world.
Yes, and serves them right.
Serves them right. Back in my day, there weren't any stools.
Back in my day, yeah, there weren't any wussies.
Oh, man. So I want to talk about music.
Very good. I do too.
That's how we came together, and you are such a talented musician. You started on percussion in the school days, and now you're dedicated to piano, and you have an interesting gift and approach. And I mean, obviously you have a unique approach because of your size, but how did you come to love music and the piano?
We had an old, like, antique player piano with the player removed in our dining room. Mm-hmm. And my mom was cooking one night. She just all of a sudden heard all of these little notes coming from the piano room. And it was me. My brother says that he's the one that put me on the bench. And I just started playing. And you can kind of tell kids who are interested in music, they kind of do one or two notes at a time and are kind of trial and error figuring out, wow, well, if I play this note, then this sound comes out. If I play this note, a different sound comes out. Versus a more hyper, less interested kid is just going to bang as much as they possibly can just to create a loud, fun noise.
Sure.
And I was definitely the former. And I figured out how to play chords somehow as a three-year-old.
Awesome.
And so my parents took me around town to see who could teach me piano lessons, and they came to the university that I ended up attending. They said, we have a preparatory department, but it's not going to be until he's four that we can take him. And so I turned four on a Sunday, and so that next Monday, I went for my first piano lesson, and it was amazing. That program was really, really solid. For instance, I learned all of my major scales at the age of four because they had a gigantic wooden piano keyboard in a room, and you would hop from note to note. So, like, they would say, I want you to hop the C scale, and you would just hop from one C to the other using all the white keys, and they'd say, hop the D scale, and you would know which black ones to hop to and which Wow. white ones to skip. And so that's just an example. I mean, a four-year-old's mind is just a sponge. And so
Right.
if you're getting that weekly training, it's amazing what a four-year-old can learn. But very early on, it became apparent that I had a gift that not necessarily clashed with my lessons. It was almost like a different instrument entirely, because reading music was never easy for me. It was always a challenge. But hearing my piano teacher play the music then kind of opened up an opportunity for me to learn it an easier way. I play everything by ear now. I don't read sheet music at all. Even at an early age, I was writing my own songs and arranging my own songs. I remember the song in the 90s that came out, Runaway Train.
Yeah, Soul Asylum.
Yes. So my brother Steven was listening to it on the radio, and I went to the piano and could play the chorus with the bass and all the chords, and I just remember him thinking that was really cool, and I was like, everybody can't do this, and he was like, no. And so that was really neat.
That's awesome.
There's a few stories just from childhood that I've been able to learn songs by ear, and music's a language, and it's really tough to get over that hump of being fluent. But once you do, it's like you see the world in a new way.
Yeah.
And so I wouldn't say my job is super stressful on one hand, but on the other hand, I am responsible for a lot. And my hair has gotten significantly grayer since I've been promoted. But the piano's been such a refuge of stress relief.
Yeah.
And I honestly don't know what I would do if I couldn't release stress in that way. Like, I feel like I'd go crazy.
Right. Yeah. Music is this incredible thing that it really takes a lot of effort to learn and figure out and, you know, get comfortable with and feel like you are achieving when you're getting started. And even the first 10 years, I would say, when you're learning an instrument, it takes a long time to learn songs and learn the basics and be able to actually have a voice. But then once you do, and you're able to sit down and play, it's an incredible feeling. And especially if you're able to share it with other people. I've seen videos of you performing with singers and other people, and that's such a great collaboration, you know?
For sure.
There are a couple mini documentaries that are out on you. You talk about being visual with music and how you see notes and how you experience them. Talk about that.
Yeah, so I was on America's Got Talent, I think season 12, but I was speaking with a producer, and the producer said, after I kind of told this lady what I was able to do, I mean, she said, John Michael, I've been the producer for American Idol for 12 years. And for America's Got Talent for 7 years, I've probably had interviews like this for tens of thousands of musicians, which is just crazy. She said over her career, and she said, and I can count on one hand how many people can do what you can do. I was like, oh my gosh, like, wow.
Incredible. So what is that?
Yeah. And so I've never been able to articulate it real well, but I'm essentially able to hear something and then immediately see how to play it in my mind. And so I'm able to instantaneously play something on the piano after hearing it. And it can just be like a stupid, like, insurance commercial with like this simple piano song. Like, I could play it verbatim. Now, that's not— there are some pianists with autism who can, like, Rachmaninoff note for note. Like, I'm not like that in a parroting type faction. You know, I can't just parrot something.
Right.
But I can, like, actually see the musical makeup of a song and then do whatever I want to with it.
Yeah.
If it's in the key of C, I can play it in the key of F.
Yeah.
I can change the chord progression. I know the song just by hearing it. But what makes mine unique is this producer gave me the word synesthesia, which means essentially something that was intended for one sense is caught and perceived by a different sense. So, you know, music is intended for the sense of hearing, and I'm actually able to see music.
Yeah.
Like, in my mind. It's bizarre. And if I'm by myself and it's quiet, I can play the piano in my head. I know what all the notes sound like. And I can, like, just see my 10 fingers and see all 88 keys, and I can actually practice.
That's amazing.
It's crazy. Like, if there's a brand new song that came on the radio, I heard it one time, I can just sit and think about it, play it a few times in my head, and then go to the piano and play it.
That's incredible. I don't know anybody like that.
It's a bizarre gift, because I don't either. And but it's all I know. It's funny how there's this expectation when you're a professional pianist. Like, I'll show up to a wedding and they'll just slap this really difficult sheet music in front of me. And I'm like, nope. Like, this is not like, do you have a YouTube video or something I can listen to? And so there are definitely challenges with my gift, because it's kind of been a crutch in a way, because I have not been able to really have to read music well, because what's the point of reading it when I can just hear it and play it?
Yeah.
And do what I want to with it in my style and make it sound better in some cases to me with my style. But there are plenty of people who play by ear. But what I do is just a little different, and it's weird, but I love it. It's also what makes it fun. Like, I can't play the same song twice ever.
The same way.
And so it's tough. Like, even on my albums, somebody will be like, oh, I love that song on your album, can you play it? And I'm like, I've not played that since the recording studio. And when I'm in the studio, you know, nothing is practiced. And then when I'm playing in public, like, I don't practice.
That's amazing.
I'm doing everything real time. I'm just playing and writing real time.
Yeah.
And so I get to choose, do I want to do two courses? Do I want to play this time up an octave, go down an octave, what key? Like, I'm just, it's all organic, and it's such an emotional process to play. And I can, like, read the room, and the room affects the song. It's bizarre. I can't really explain it, but it's definitely the sixth sense that I'm able to use. And with technology nowadays, I mean, it's so cool that can be recorded and, like, shared all over the world. It's awesome.
And you do that regularly. So do you also have perfect pitch?
So if you're a true music nerd, you know, there's, like, different instances of perfect pitch. You know, some people are like a car horn. They're like, oop, that's an F sharp.
Right.
I'm more a, like, if you were to say, like, hey, I need you to do this note, I go to my piano, my little mind piano.
Yeah.
And I know, like, what an E sounds like, and I can kind of, like, relatively get to that note. You know, it really doesn't do that much good now that, I mean, you can pull up a piano app and hit any note you want. And I've tried not to develop that at all, because as a pianist, having an out-of-tune piano, you're just helpless.
Right.
Like, if you play the guitar or a violin, you can just tune it.
Right.
And you're good. But if it is hell on earth,
yeah,
to play an out-of-tune piano with, like, the truest, purest, perfect pitch.
Right.
And so I'm not on that end of it. But yes, my musical ear is very attuned to pitch.
Yeah.
That's a long answer for for yes.
So I did a little bit of research on SED, and the first thing I realized is that there's no way I will ever be able to spell that in my entire life.
Oh, it's awful.
It's crazy. But what I read about SED is that there can be issues with hearing and vision.
Yes.
That go along with that dwarfism.
Yes.
I mean, you got the complete opposite end of the spectrum. You're hypersensitive auditorily.
Hypersensitive. When I was 30, I was like, God, I've not been to the eye doctor since I was 5. Like, I don't even know what it's like. I should probably do that now that I'm an adult. And I went, and she was like, yeah, your vision's so good, don't come back for at least another 5 years. I've never had an issue with seeing anything ever.
She's like, you're making everybody feel badly. Please don't come back.
I mean, I'm like, gosh, that's amazing just to be blessed with good hearing and good vision, because a lot of people would kill for that.
Right.
But like at the same time, it's something I take for granted. Once we kind of get talking about some of the spiritual side of my story, like that is a very real fact about SEDs, is limited to no hearing or vision. I mean, there's a lot of SEDs with hearing aids, a lot of SEDs with glasses at a young age, but then there's SEDs without hip problems as well. And so we've all got our struggles.
I say it in every episode, dwarfism is a mixed bag.
It is.
None of us fall into a legit column.
Right.
It's all unique. Well, let's talk about that a little bit. How does that fit in with your faith, and how do you view that?
If you were to walk into a church, a huge church, and ask 100 different people, what does it mean to be a Christian? I feel like you'd get 100 different answers.
I would agree with that.
And what does it mean to be a Christian little person? Like, is even more of a mixed bag of an answer. And there's not many people who can answer that question. My faith has been a gigantic part of my story. And I would say, you know, just for starters, us being little people, you know, from a scientific perspective, has to do with, at least my understanding, again, this is what Wikipedia tells me, is a gene mutation.
Right.
There's a gene, an SED gene in my DNA that made me a little person. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that mutation occurs roughly 1 out of 100,000 births. And, you know, that mutated gene can be hereditary as well, but it is that gene that denotes a person being little. But as a Christian, and even again, Christians don't agree on really anything nowadays. I mean, it is, that word is so ambiguous. But like a Bible believing Christian, there's so many things in the Bible that I would say give me hope. There's so many things that could give the world hope, but then there's a lot of things that could make us upset. But for an example, like instead of me feeling gene mutated, I feel that I've been like God made. Like there's an intentional higher being that made me this way.
Yeah.
Versus just like an accidental happening. And, you know, whether or not you believe in God or not, it's at least an interesting perspective.
Sure.
To see, huh, that's interesting that a person could even think that.
Yeah.
And part of the problem with the body of knowledge of the Bible is it's so easy to just become a slippery slope. Well, if this is true, then that means you must believe this, and that means you must believe this, and that means you must believe this, because, you know, if God like intended for me to be a little person, like there's a lot of pain in that.
Right.
So is God like wanting me to suffer? Is God wanting, like, there's all these questions. And so just to boil down my, and kind of answer my view of, like, what is a Christian, I just believe that I'm really no different than anybody else. I suck as a person. I mean, I'm not saying every single person sucks as people. I just know I suck as a person.
Yeah.
You know, just because I'm a Christian doesn't mean I don't suck. I need a lot of help, and I don't have answers figured out at all.
Yeah.
The difference is I believe that there's something called sin, and I believe I'm forgiven of my sin as a Christian. Yeah. And that's really the only difference I can think of.
I love all that. Can you talk to how you view yourself as having these gifts or these sensitivities that help you with music? And
absolutely. In addition to impaired hearing and impaired vision, there's a lot to do with hands as well. So I know the viewers can't see my hands, but the average little person is not able to make a ball with their fist. Like, are you able to make a ball with your fist? Wow, that's better than me. Maybe Wikipedia is
wrong. But I can do this.
Wow, is that?
Oh, you can kind of do that.
Can I do it? Are we the same person, Christoph?
No, we are definitely not the same person.
Is that the Star Trek symbol you're doing?
Is it something like that? Yeah.
But there's a very similar type of dwarfism called Kinesis, and it's very similar to SED, but their fingers at each joint kind of jut a different direction.
Wow.
And so it would not be possible to play the piano to the degree that I'm physically able to.
Yeah.
So what's cool about my faith is I just feel like not only was I created as a little person on this world, but I was given a gift to play the piano and even given a body with the gift of being able to hear, the gift of being able to see music, and the gift of fingers that can physically play. And in one of my documentaries, I kind of show two things that I do to overcome the obvious challenge of having such a small body playing one of the largest instruments.
Yep.
One is I can't reach the pedal, so I have a pedal extension. And the other is not being able to reach from one end of the piano to the other. So I have to, if I'm going to do some like wild, fast runs, I have to sit with my legs crossed so that I can literally catapult myself from one end of the piano to the other.
I watched that. And I saw you describe how you do that. Tell us about that, because it looks so uncomfortable to me. I would never be able to sit the way that you sit at a piano, because normally when somebody sits at a piano, they have both of their feet on the pedals and they're operating. There are three pedals normally on a piano. Not only do you not have 2 feet underneath the piano, you're also sitting. Tell us about it.
Well, okay, so I'm going to do you a favor and adjust the camera down. Look how I'm sitting right now. I'm sitting Indian style.
I can't sit Indian style for more than 4 minutes. My legs go completely numb when I sit Indian style. Talk about hip problems. I would never.
It's my hip dysplasia. So growing up, it would have been better for me to have never sat that way, because my hip sockets are like permanently turned inwards.
Wow.
And that's playing a role on my hip pain today. But again, after those hip sockets have formed and ossified fully, then it just kind of is what it is for forever.
Right.
And so my natural sitting position that's most comfortable is both of my hips turned in, which just kind of leaves me naturally into a crossed leg formation. It's weird. Like when I go to a physical therapist, you know, they can like twist my legs inward as much as they want. But when it comes to twisting my leg even straight or the other way, it's just not going to happen. And they're like, oh my goodness gracious, like, what is wrong with you? Like, I do not know. This is just how it's always been.
This reminds me of a story. I went to see Dr. Kopitz one year. I was probably a teenager at this time. And there was a young girl in the office, probably 9 years older. She was young, you know, a kid. And Dr. Kopitz was going to see her. She was waiting as well. And she was really talkative and friendly and was kind of bouncing around the waiting room. But she could take her femurs out of her hip sockets and turn her legs around.
Oh my goodness.
And she did it with both legs at the same time and walked backwards. I can't, even just thinking about it now, I can't.
Yeah, she needs her own Cirque du Soleil show. That's crazy.
She did it maybe two or three times and her mother's like, stop that, cut that out. Whatever her name was, I don't know.
That's incredible.
I'll never be able to forget that image.
Unsee that, yeah.
I'll never be able to unsee that. I mean, her heels were facing forward.
That's like something out of a horror movie. That's awesome.
When I was describing it to you, I was thinking the same thing.
I would do that all the time around the office. Just to weird people out.
Yep. So how do you sit at the piano then?
So typically I sit with my right foot all the way down on the pedal. Mm-hmm. And my left foot crossed over my right leg's lap.
Just ouch, man. Just ouch.
Yep. And it is like the most comfortable sitting position for me. So I can do that for hours. And again, since most pianists can't sit at a piano bench for very long because there's no back support.
Right.
Well, you know, we've got titanium infused backs. So like,
yeah.
Do you have insane stamina when it comes to sitting without a back, or do you need a back?
My posture is perfect.
Yes.
I'm fused from T1 to L4, so I have a lot.
Yep, I do too.
Yeah.
So that's not something that tires me out. So I can sit at a piano in that one position. I mean, if I had a catheter, I could probably be there for 24 hours straight. Yeah.
TMI, but you know, we'll take it. So what do you do when you have to get from one end of the piano to the other quickly?
So I lean, let's say we're going low notes to high notes. I lean left and I stick my foot, which again is in my lap, up under like the cusp of the piano under the keys, and I catch myself. And then I take my body weight that's resting on my foot and I just push.
You like catapult yourself.
I'm literally catapulting myself, leaning over, meanwhile hitting a bunch of keys in the process. And when I get to the far end, because I'm leaning, I catch myself with my knee up under the piano. And that I was just doing naturally. Somebody had to point out to me that that's what was going on. I didn't even know that I was doing that. But again, it was just something I came up with just to get from point A to point B.
It's like your left leg is a steering wheel or something like that.
Yes, it is.
And you wouldn't know it. Describing it, it sounds awkward and I would not be able to play piano like that. But when you play, you don't hear an interruption. It sounds like perfect notes all the way across. You've nailed it. You've got it down to a science, a well-oiled machine, and it just works. That's the one thing I think is so cool about music and disability. Even if you don't have a disability, like it all kind of works together. Or if you're disabled and you don't play music, you have to figure out what works best for you and make it as seamless as possible. It's just the way that you do in music and in everyday life. And I think that convergence of the two is really beautiful and cool. We really have to just make it our own. And it might not look like the easiest thing or like the way that might work for us, but you have to appreciate that it works for somebody else.
Absolutely. And one other thing that I've learned about my style related to dwarfism is the whole time that I took lessons, it was 10 years, I could not reach the pedals. So I was playing music with no pedals. So I was having to like sustain the notes just by holding the keys longer.
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly like playing a harpsichord or an organ. So when I would let the notes go, the sound would go, which is not what you want when you're sustaining. So I would just learn to hold them until the last possible millisecond where I needed those fingers for new notes. And so when I was 13, we got these pedal extensions from a magazine, and they were awesome. It was like a new world, but I didn't have a piano teacher at that time.
Mm.
I was self-taught then. So I came up with my own pedaling guide, basically.
Yeah.
What that means is, in addition to pedaling, I'm still holding the notes as long as I possibly can, because I played the piano 10 years that way. And so you kind of get this over-sustained sound. And it's...
Your muscle memory is still there.
Yes. And I'm very aware of all of the notes that are being played at one time. And this, the moment that I have to play a note that wouldn't sound good with all the notes before it, I let up the pedal to kind of create a clean slate. But until I hit that new bad note, I'm just going to let it all ring together.
That's awesome.
Because it's all within the same key signature. So again, that was something I was just doing. I had never really thought about it. And a musician friend of mine came to one of my concerts, and I was getting feedback from him, and he mentioned that. He was like, I just noticed your sustain is so unique, and I had never heard that before. And so I kind of had to dive back into my past to say, gosh, why did I do that? But that's why.
That's cool. So your hands work remarkably well with SED to play piano. What is your span?
I can like sort of reach an octave, but not really.
Yeah.
It's much more comfortable to hit one note and then use that note and stretch my hand to the next note in the octave. So I would say 7 keys comfortably, which is not a pretty sound to hit a tonic first note and a 7th note typically. So the
depends on what you want to play.
Depends on what you want to play. And so for the most part, I'm not reaching more than 5 notes at a time. But
yeah,
you just have to have an immense hand-eye coordination, because I'm all over the place crossing hands to make up for the fact that I can't reach much. And again, when you're sustaining everything, it sounds like I've got more than 2 hands, because in a way I do, because I'm using the left hand for these bottom notes, and less than a second later, that same hand is playing notes in the upper register, and you're hearing all of it.
That's cool. That adaptation is so unique, and it's so you, because you had to come up with it. And in compensating, you know, for what you might not be able to span, you're learning other ways to play songs in different ways and embellish and make it better and more your own. You know, I think that's so cool about music and overcoming and figuring it out.
It is, because one of the main reasons I quit piano lessons was these classical artists would write these amazing pieces for gigantic hands.
Right.
And so my teacher was like, well, even though it says you need to play these notes, let's just chop the bottom note and the top 2 notes off because you can't reach them. So just play the notes you can reach. And it just sounded like garbage.
Right.
It wasn't the song. It was like a gimped lesser version of.
Right.
And so if I kind of know how the song goes, and I know the melody, and I know the chord progression and the rhythms, I can build up from the ground. And yeah, I might not be able to hit all those notes, but I'm going to be able to reinvent the song in a new way that fits my style and it won't sound gimped.
I think that's awesome. And it's a testament too that you've mentioned that you play at weddings. I know that you've played corporate gigs, restaurants, country clubs. You're not a hobbyist. You're a professional piano player that goes out and plays and in the studio as well. What has that experience been like for you to show up at a public place? I'm sure you have to bring your pedal extensions so you can utilize the piano. You know, people are going out on a Saturday night and wanting to, and it's not like you do it because you need the money. Like, you have a really great job where you don't need the money, but you're going out, you want to share your talent and your gift and you want to be seen. What do you think that says about you and sharing your talent and skill?
Well, I started as a professional pianist at the age of 18 when I did not have a great job. And so I did need the money.
Yeah.
And basically I just haven't stopped since. Like, even now it's just extra spending money, which is nice, but it started as a way that, you know, I could, instead of eating gross food during college, that I could eat amazing food during college. And instead of living the typical college life, it padded me and I was able to do stuff for people. And so it was awesome. But, you know, yeah, there's some great stories. There's a few weird stories. There was an older man who, like, came up behind me and just, like, started nibbling on my ears one time. Like, literally, my earlobe was in his mouth, and it was...
What?
Awful. It was so gross, and I'm such a germaphobe. So there was the ear-nibbling guy. There was...
I hope he left you a tip.
Oh, he did. He gave me $10. I still remember that. So
it should have been 15 or at least 20.
Yeah, I don't know that that was a good trade, but it happened. And then the piano that I played was a digital piano, and it had these discs in it. And when I wasn't there, the owner would put a disc in that would, like, play a song, but, like, kind of in a goofy keyboard demo song fashion.
Sure.
Like, you could tell it wasn't live music.
Right.
And he would just kind of move his hands aimlessly on the keyboard without actually pressing anything. And so I got hired for an event at somebody's house one time. I mean, I got hired for many events many times, and it almost always went well. But this particular one I remember because I went to his house. It was amazing. And he had the exact same piano that the restaurant did.
Yeah.
When I get there, I sat down and he brings me this book of discs with songs. He was like, "All right, well, do what you do." And I was like, "What are you talking about?" And he was like, "Well, here's all your songs for tonight." And I was like, "Why do I need these?" He was like, "What are you talking about?" And I was like, "I'm here to play the piano." He's like, "You mean you're actually playing the piano?" And I was like, "You mean you hired me like an animatronic?" Like, I mean, this is like, it was a bizarre conversation.
You're like, "I need to ask for a lot more money now."
Yes, I know. I was like, "What?" And so that was a weird story. But to answer your question about pedal extensions, they're like $100 and they last like 20 years.
Yeah.
And I'm not really supposed to lift more than 5 pounds and they weigh like 8 pounds. And so I can do it in a pinch, like to lift them in and out of my car or something, but I try not to carry them. And so what I do is I just, if it's a standing gig, then I will just leave them there and have multiple sets.
Sure.
So I get there and I just set my pedals up, and because they're very compact, they'll just fit, you know, underneath to the side if I'm not there. So, like, the gigs have always been great because I'm a people person also.
Yeah.
And I'd much rather be playing for other people than just for myself at my house. I mean, that's kind of boring. But then secondly, like, in addition to the money, it's just good to play. The more you play, the better you get.
Yep.
And the more you play, the more people you meet. And they kind of found out that I could hear something and listen to it. I remember a couple, it was like their 50th wedding anniversary, and he was able to pull up a song on his phone and play it for me. And it was like the most obscure song in the world. And I was able to play it. And he and his wife started crying.
Awesome.
And they said, we've never met anybody who could play our song for us. And like, here we are celebrating our 50th wedding anniversary, and we got to hear our song. So there's stuff like that that was just awesome.
Yeah.
Or customers that would suggest me to learn songs that, you know, would introduce me to new genres of music or new artists.
Yep.
It was awesome.
That's cool. And so you don't really play out in, you know, country clubs and restaurants now, but you've moved on to YouTube.
I have, yes.
Yep.
And so if you just go to youtube.com/JMOPiano, my channel pops up. And I kind of can't stand social media in general. I just feel like it has a tendency to be very superficial, unless it's for business purposes, because to be relevant, it's very difficult to not have a strong social media presence in the business yep. world. So I've used all of my social media channels to try to push YouTube. And I mean, the success that I've found has been mind blowing. I mean, I'm by no means a viral YouTube sensation, but I mean, it's crazy. Like I get 15 subscribers every day.
That's awesome.
Organically.
Yeah.
And it's, I don't know where I do know where these people are coming from, because Google tells me 1 in 3 is a U.S. subscriber. And then 2 out of 3 are not from the U.S.
Wow.
It's weird. Like one day it'll say like, you have 800 views from Spain today. You have 800 Brazilian views.
That's so cool.
You've got 20 followers from Japan. Like it's, and I think that's part of the benefit of playing instrumental music. American songwriters have made a global impact.
Yep.
And as songs get translated, they become wildly popular in other countries. And so as people are Googling it in their native language, somehow my covers are coming up. It's crazy.
That's awesome. That's great.
It is.
What do you think that means for the visibility of little people?
I think it's great because we've talked about some of the disadvantages of being a little person.
Right.
But there are certainly some advantages.
Absolutely.
Especially from a marketing perspective. You know, marketing gurus are looking for that niche difference to set their product or service apart.
Mm-hmm.
And so even my videos, like my thumbnails are very boring when you look at all of my videos, because it's just like the same angle of me on the same piano.
Yeah.
But if you Google like Georgia on my mind piano,
yeah,
then you're going to see like weird artistic musical notes with like cursive Georgia on my mind piano or like these light scribed things, and or me, it's like a little person sitting on a huge piano.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
What is that about? And then they're gonna click me.
Yeah,
because little people spark curiosity in people.
Yeah, exactly, and with good reason too. Because
sure,
I'm interested to see how you play piano. I remember when I first met you, and I saw you sitting at the piano, and I wanted to say, Are your legs asleep? What's going on, man? Are you okay? I was worried about you. And then I was like, and then I thought in my head, like, he doesn't need a mom. He's probably fine. Like he knows what he's doing.
Yeah. And I remember meeting you. I've always wanted to play the drum set, but I was like, how does he reach all that? Like that is crazy.
Sometimes it's just barely, man. It's it's a very compact situation, but when you watch your videos, it's a real deal studio situation. It sounds great. It looks great. And you can see the focus in your eyes that you're just so honed in on the piano and the song. And it draws the viewer in and it makes this huge connection. And I love that. You do have the visual of someone with a very unique body. But when you listen, you're like, this is so good. And it sounds beautiful. And
well, thank you.
I love knowing too that it's never the same twice. I think that's really cool because, especially in a studio situation, when I was in the studio, we wanted the song to be, you know, this thing. And I wasn't, at that time, I wasn't that good at making every single take the same. And in your instance, it sounds beautiful and it's an artistic thing. When I was doing it, it was, we want to hit this mark with a record. And because I was in like a rock band that was trying to fit certain things together. And so it's totally different. We were also not as talented of musicians as you are. So it's...
Well, I'll say this. A band is so different. A solo artist has it so much easier because I don't have these other points in time that I need to hit and do certain things. It's totally free. I can do whatever I want, whenever I want, right, however I want. And I'm the ultimate producer of it. So if I'm like, yep, that was good, we can move to the next. So, I mean, I've gotten it so down that my recording engineer is mixing my take real time.
Yeah.
So that when we're done with it, if I don't even want to listen back to it, it takes him about 30 seconds and it's mixed. And then he just starts the next one. So I can, in a 4-hour session, I think my record is 20 cover videos.
That's insane.
I bring outfits and I change different times just to make it look like I was there more than I was.
And you bring a catheter so you can see.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that would be nice. Yeah, and then he Dropboxes them to me, and on my way home, I listen to all of them. It's an insane process now, but I will say a cool YouTube story. I saw a comment from a girl, and she said, "Hey, I'm a YouTuber. I've got a hair and makeup channel." She said, "I'm a singer as well, and I have a separate channel for that." And she sent me links to them, and they had like millions of views. Mm-hmm. So I was super excited.
Yeah.
And she said, "I'm wanting to sing this song called So Will I." So I was looking at covers, like trying to find like karaoke versions or instrumental versions just to see if I could like practice and sing along. And she said, "And I came across yours," and she said, "I'm just like in tears."
Awesome.
"I'm like sitting here in New York City crying. I'm watching all your cover videos. I'm just binge watching your channel. My husband's asleep next to me, and I want to wake him up to, like, share this with him."
Yeah.
And we exchanged phone numbers, and, like, one thing led to another, and we decided to collaborate. And so I flew to New York City, and we went in together and rented studio space.
Awesome.
But what was interesting was... she did her vocal part to my piano part recorded in Alabama. So, like, I recorded it the same way at my studio here, sent her the audio. She went to a studio there, recorded hers. So then we get to the video part, and I'm like, "Oh, no." I've got to somehow make my fingers look like they did 2 months ago when I recorded this. And it was horrible.
You did need the keyboard with the discs.
I did need the keyboard with the disc at that point. And so, I mean, and I was so bad at it. So, you know, if you watch those videos, like, with a hawk eye, you can kind of tell it wasn't me. But it's one of the best looking videos on my channel. Cool. And then she put one on her channel as well. And she's just an awesome girl. And we still keep in touch. And hopefully we're going to do some projects in the near future.
That's awesome. To kind of wrap this up, I was going to ask you, what was your most unique either comment at a live gig or comment on a YouTube video that stands out, either positive, negative, weird, strange, whatever, because I'm sure you've gotten some.
Commenters are ridiculous. I mean, I've gotten thousands of comments, and I'm OCD about responding to all of them, and it's just good to do to build your channel. But there's some like hateful people out there.
Right.
That are just like, look at that little guy, or, you know, they use much more colorful language than that. And so,
sure.
You know, I've got to remove comments every once in a while. There's some like weird ones like, hey, do you want a sugar daddy? I'm like, no, not looking for that. And I mean, I just delete them.
People are awful.
People are awful. Yes. But then there's some like really cool stories. On my Side of Sound documentary, I try not to, you know, just cram my faith down people's throats, because I mean, I'm not a preacher by any means. I'm just trying to tell my story very matter of fact. It's a cool story that I share in the video about the day I was born. My birthday is September 3rd. And like we discussed earlier, like the doctors told my parents, like, your son will most likely be blind or deaf or might not be able to walk, and kind of went through this laundry list of symptoms and awful things that could have come about, because that's all he learned about in the one chapter of dwarfism in medical school.
Right.
And like, my name was John, and September 3rd numerically is 9-3, and John is a book in the Bible. And like, my dad was really struggling with like why God would allow me to be born with this disability. And so he turned to John 9:3, and it said basically that it was not due to sin that this happened, but the works of the Lord might be displayed in him. And so that gave my parents immense encouragement. It just hinted at, no, there's a purpose behind this. And so I got a comment on that video from a guy that said, hey, I'm an atheist and I have a 2-year-old. His birthday is also September 3rd, and he's a little person. And we've been very discouraged about his entire future. And he said, but your video with this story has given us immense hope.
Amazing.
And that's just so cool. And I think he was from London. It wasn't even a U.S. viewer. And like, how in the world did he stumble on that? Like, it's, and that's just, you know, that's what I want to do. I want to encourage people. And I don't think that's limited to being a little person. You know, we all need to make this world a better place. And we have responsibility to just be kind and share good news. You know, if I'm blessed with all that I've been given, you know, it would be such a detriment for me not to share those gifts and at least try to encourage other people. So when you get comments like that, that really blew my expectations away as far as like what YouTube was even capable of, that stands out as the most amazing comment to me.
I love it. I think that's so awesome, man. That's such a great story, and it's transcending everything, and just seeing that we're all people and we're all in this together and we're all susceptible to anything. You know, we don't know what life is going to throw at us in any capacity at all. And so just having that connection with somebody else can mean so much. I love that. Awesome. John Michael, the pianist, thank you so much for talking about your music and sharing it with us.
Thank you, Christoph. Thank you.
I would be lying if I said that listening to John Michael play piano and thinking about the challenges he has overcome doesn't conjure up some deep feelings. Music is truly emotive. Some of the best and most incredible pieces ever made have been created from places of hurt, anger, depression, and sadness. It's really beautiful music that he puts out there, and I love that he's continually sharing his gift. We all have something within us that is going to make somebody smile, regardless of our height. We just need to let our light shine because people deserve to see it. In part three of our conversation, we get into what dating is like for John Michael and how he balances being a man of faith with still enjoying some fun in Las Vegas. And we're going to hear some more music from him as well. In the meantime, you can check out John Michael's YouTube at JMO Piano. It's always great to receive your emails and comments. If you want to send us a message, you can write us at abigdealpod@gmail.com. You can also find us on Facebook and Instagram. Just search Big Deal Pod. Please rate, comment, and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. I'm playing the drum beats again on this episode, so I hope you dig them. We'll catch you next time, and don't forget, life is short. Have fun. Hey there, amazing listener. I would like to mention that I'm Kind of a Big Deal now has a Patreon page. If you've been positively influenced by my show, or you know someone who could be, please share it with them. Word of mouth is huge. And if you feel inclined to be more involved and support I'm Kind of a Big Deal, please visit my page on Patreon, patreon.com/bigdealpod. The link is also in the show notes. Big thank you in advance.